The Taishriven Chronicles by Richard Fife. Chapter 4. The Meister's Daughter. Micah took a deep breath and gained her composure, then walked into the salon. Numerous lords and ladies, not to mention their attendants, filled the large room, which should have been called a ballroom or hall instead of salon. People in the big cities always felt they had to make everything sound smaller than it really was. She spotted Prince Dorian quickly and was somewhat disappointed in the size of the crowd around him. If it was not for the white suit he wore and the small circlet on his head, she might not have realized it was him. He could have been any other courtier, and not even an exceptionally pretty one. Elsewhere in the room, she saw at least four other larger groups that were centered on other nobles, all of which looked far more grand than the prince. To her surprise, one of those groups surrounded the Sunset Count. She was tempted to join Jaeger's discussion. She could, seeing as he had greeted her at the dock yesterday, not to mention Duke Tonniger was in the crowd as well. But she was the prince's guest, and she had yet to even see him since her arrival. Snubbing him, even if he was not apparently the most influential man in court, would not be wise. After all, influence was not the only measure of power. She approached the group and curtsied. "My prince." Dorian looked at her in confusion for a moment, then smiled. "Ah! My Lady Canidus, of course. I'm so sorry I was unable to meet you at the docks. Affairs of state held my attention, else I would have been there." "Thank you, Your Majesty," she said. "Count Jaeger and Duke Tonniger gave me an adequate greeting, though, and the rooms you had prepared are more than adequate." The prince smiled absently, then turned to listen to what someone else was saying, and a lady next to Micah smiled and turned to her. "So, you're Baroness Canidus's heir?" she said. "A pleasure, I'm sure. I'm Becca de Rosa." Micah smiled and nodded. "De Rosa? I can't say I've heard of that house." Becca's smile slipped only a hair. "We're minor nobles here in town, although Count Jaeger is actually my uncle, not that he's allowed to acknowledge it." "But of course," Micah said, "I must say, I'm glad only men can be appointed to the position. I cannot imagine giving up my family ties like the Sunset Count must." "He's a man of duty," Becca said. "He actually petitioned to be appointed to the position, wouldn't you know? But still, he never did have a flair for adventure or travel, not like I've heard you do, my lady. Is it true that you arrived on an Atarvinian airship?" "Yes, a gift from Duke Gera." "I knew it!" Becca grinned in a very unladylike way and turned to another woman nearby. "Did you hear that, Ariel? I knew that was an Atarvinian ship we saw yesterday." The other woman sighed. "I never said it wasn't, Becca. I merely said that High Meister Balak could make better." "Hardly," Becca said. "As I hear it, Atarvin's High Meister did more than make revenants. His hands were in everything." "Atarvin doesn't have a High Meister," Micah said. "In fact, they don't even have a Meister's Guild. But if they did, I'm sure Quentin Lazarus would fill the role. The man is a genius." Ariel scoffed. "A madman is more like it, what with those monsters he made. Tesma would never create such abominations." Becca's eyes were wide. "Do you know Meister Lazarus?" "I met him in passing a few times," Micah said. "When I visited the cloister, I also met Atarvin's top general, Jareth Travell." Both women gasped slightly, and Ariel leaned in. "After he was... made into the first revenant?" Micah smiled a hair when they flinched. "No, actually. After Lazarus saved his life, General Travell stayed away from the city. I did meet several other revenants, though." She paused and smiled more fully. "And I'm sorry, but we haven't been properly introduced." Becca squeaked. "Oh, I'm sorry, my lady. This is Ariel Dunny. Her father is a lord under Duke Tonniger. Ariel, this is Lady Micah Canidus, the heiress to the barony." They exchanged a few inane niceties, and then Micah allowed the discussion to go where the two women would take it, from the gossip of lesser nobles to their presumptions of power. She watched the prince from the corner of her eye, but she saw no easy opportunity to sheer away from the drivel. And then something caught her attention. "Did you say rebels?" The two women looked at Micah in confusion for a moment. Becca tittered. "Oh, of course, you've been out of the country for so long, and in Atarvin besides, you must not know. Yes, there are rebels plotting against the king. Sunset House can't prove it yet, but Jaeger has told me he's certain they're behind the riots and protests." "Jaeger needs to stop looking for conspiracies and focus on real crime," Ariel said. Why, just last night, my manor was broken into by a band of ragtag thieves while we were away at the opera. Becca gasped.
Oh, you poor thing! Did they take anything irreplaceable?
Ariel smiled.
Not a thing, as it happens. They made it to our secure rooms, but then our security stopped them. One of them was left behind so badly wounded, I think he died. At least he was hit with one of Tesma's shock rods, so he didn't get any blood on anything.
Pardon, Micah said. I can't help but notice the familiar way you speak of the High Meister. Do you know him?
Ariel laughed.
My family was one of the few to support him in his early days here in Tyjervin, so you might say that.
Why, Becca and I are going on an outing with his daughter, Christina, this afternoon.
Micah forgot about the prince and gave Ariel her full focus. The prince had never been her real goal anyway, even more so now that she had a feeling for how unstable the monarchy really was. Still, she knew he had some connection to the High Meister, so he had been a place to start. But perhaps she could bypass the prince entirely.
What is he like? Micah said. The High Meister.
Ariel pursed her lips and thought.
He is intense. When he's talking to you, it's almost overwhelming. Even if he seems to only be half listening, it's like he can hear things we can't, perhaps the very secrets of the universe, and he can never stop listening.
Was Lazarus like that? Becca said.
Quentin?
Micah said.
Oh, no. If you didn't know who you were talking to, you might think you'd found some old forgotten grandfather. He was prone to thoughtful silences, but nothing like what Ariel just described.
Of course, Lazarus also was hardly the kind of man to be able to rise up to such a prominent position as Tesma has. Why, even after I found out who he was, I'd have thought Quentin would have always preferred to just tinker in his workshop than deal in the halls of power.
Oh, Becca looked down for a moment then perked back up.
Wait, I know. Why don't you come with us on our outing with Christina? I mean, Lazarus is surely a contemporary to the High Meister. I'm sure you'd find it interesting. She turned to Ariel. Would that be all right with you?
Ariel shrugged. I don't see why not, provided you aren't already engaged for the afternoon, my lady. Micah kept her smile restrained, a mere curl at the tips of her lips.
I would be honored. It is always a pleasure to meet new and interesting people.
Then there it is, Becca said. We're taking a carriage over just after lunch. Meet us in the main courtyard?
Of course, Micah said. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Despite the pallet consisting of little more than some old straw and a worn blanket, the bustle of morning in the hole did not wake Marcus. It was not until someone actually started screaming out in the common room that he came to and rubbed the sleep from his eyes and realized just how noisy he had been before.
You promised me, Brian!
Was that Kira screaming?
I don't want to hear technically or realistically. You said you wouldn't...
Kira! That was Gabriel. He was having to shout just to be heard over her. Leave off. He's fine. And he asked to go. And honestly,
I don't want to hear it, Gabriel!
There was a moment of silence, and then she let out a wordless screech of exasperation. Marcus pulled himself out from under his blanket and poked his head out into the hallway. From the sound of it, they had been screaming in the front room, but now there were only children running a few morning chores before they went out on the streets. He slipped into his coat and went to the lavatory to relieve himself and fetch some water in his tin pot. By the time he had finished refilling his tank, most of the urchins had left, and Gust was the only one in the front room. And when Marcus greeted him, he only received a cold glare in return. He went back to the dining area, and there he saw Kira sitting at one table by herself, and Gabriel and Vlad were at another, on the other side of the room. The two men stopped their conversation long enough to nod as Marcus entered, and Kira gave him a worried frown. He went to the back, where cook gave him some stale bread and a bowl of porridge. Then he went over and sat across from Kira.
What was that about? Marcus said.
Oh, the screaming.
Kira spared a glower for Gavriel's back.
Brian promised me he wasn't going to ask you to do any work until I had a chance to talk to you.
Oh, he claims he never actually promised, but he might as well have.
He didn't ask, Marcus said. I offered.
He still shouldn't have. I love him like a father, but sometimes the way he can talk out of both sides of his mouth make me want to strangle him.
She closed her eyes for a moment, then took a deep breath.
Are you all right?
Yeah, Marcus said. Not a scratch or dent, surprisingly. I was half expecting to break something, jumping from the roof like I did.
She shook her head, then looked at him wide-eyed.
Wait, you jumped off the roof? And you're not hurt?
Well, I caught the wall, so I didn't really fall all the way, Marcus said. She leaned back in her chair. Gavriel said you saved his life, but he didn't say anything about jumping off a roof. Marcus rubbed his right arm self-consciously. Not only had he fallen back into the habit of skulking in the night easily, he also seemed to have forgotten that his being a cyborg was still something of a novelty to the whole. Not to mention, they still didn't know exactly how much of him was mechanical. I just did what I had to do, he said. Gavriel said we'd been sold out, and then there was that man that killed Jack. In all honesty, we all probably should have died. It was dumb luck that got us out. Never discount dumb luck, Gavriel said from behind him. He and Vlad sat down at the table. Kira scowled at the large man. Don't count on it, either. Kira, Vlad said, you're tense. You need to stop worrying. I should teach you the Rasputnik mind state. It would really help you, I think. And if it doesn't, you can always just have a drink. Keep that rotten potato juice to yourself, Kira said, and I'll pass on the lessons, Vlad. Good, more Vladka for me, Gavriel said. Kira groaned. Don't use his name for it. It'll only encourage him. Vlad grinned and turned to Marcus. What about you? Want a drink? Hey now, Gavriel said. Don't give him that stuff. Might break his parts. You're just trying to hog it, Vlad said. But look at me. I want to share. That's how we do it in Rasputnik. That's all right, Marcus said. I'll pass on the drink. But for the record, getting drunk doesn't do anything more to a half-man than it does to a whole-man. Is that so? Gavriel rubbed his chin. Hey, look, I'm really thankful for you saving my life last night, and I know you're kind of shy about it, but, well... How much of me is mechanical? Marcus said. Yeah. Marcus rubbed his arm again. For as much as he did not want to tell them, they did probably have a right to know, if he was going to stay with them, at least. He took a deep breath. My entire right arm, including the shoulder, he said, both my legs through the hips, part of the right side of my body, and most of my heart. The others stared at him quietly, Gavriel as if he was looking at Marcus for the first time, Vlad in wonder, and Kira in shock. Marcus then took off his glove, revealing his mechanical hand. Overlapping brass plates hid most of the internal workings, but at the joints, one could see tiny gears and springs, hoses, and hinges. It all runs off steam, he said. Not like a normal steam engine, but off the heat and pressure in my tank. The hotter the steam, the less it takes to run the machinery. Well, Gavriel said, that's... It's beautiful, Kira said. I've never seen craftsmanship like that, even from the stuff Gavriel cons out of the Meisters. Quentin Lazarus himself worked on me, Marcus said. I was one of the first half-men made, but he did experiment with doing more than just replacing missing limbs with me. To demonstrate, he worked the switch on the back of his hand, popping out the lockpick from his index finger and a glass cutter from his middle finger. Wait, Lazarus? Vlad said. But he worked for Adervin. How'd... It's complicated, Marcus said. I wasn't a traitor, though, so just forget that thought. Never said you were, Gavriel said. But thanks for letting us know. Any other useful features, like those lockpicks? My legs have some places in them to hide things, like documents or a gun, Marcus said. And I have a few files in my forearm, and there's a grappling hook in my leg that I can attach to my arm. Otherwise, all of it is just designed to make me stronger. It's like they wanted you to be a thief, Kira said. Quentin was, well, unique. Right. Thanks for letting us know, and we promise not to spread it around, right? Gavriel gave a meaningful look to the others. Now, finish eating. We need to go over to Tesma's tower. Marcus blinked. Why are we going there? I have an in with one of the Meisters, Gavriel said. I want to go find out what that was we fought last night. Kira, Vlad, you coming? Vlad shook his head. Not me. Those Meisters send chills up my spine. I'll go work the bridge with Margot. Least she will only like to put a knife in my ribs, not... He looked at Marcus and coughed. Right. I'll come, Kira said. Right, Gavriel said. I'm going to get a few things from my room. See you up front. Marcus gave his food his full attention. At least this time Gavriel had given him a chance to eat before they left, but that did not mean Marcus would take his time. They would be waiting on him. Kira had already finished her meal before he showed up. Gavriel had hardly left the room by the time Marcus had finished. Hungry? Kira said. Not anymore, Marcus said. Let's go. Tesma's tower looked even more formidable up close. It still had the faintest blue glow to it, almost more of an impression that it should be glowing. The compound itself, a massive thing that covered the space of several city blocks, was surrounded by a tall black wall that was lined with stone spikes. There was only a single gate in, but it was open, and in fact a fair amount of traffic was coming and going into the complex. On the arch above the gate, the words Meister's Guild were carved large enough to be seen a block away. "What do they need with all this space, anyway?" Marcus said. "When I left, the Meisters had a medium-sized mansion in the Royal District, and that seemed to do them fine."
"Oh, they use it," Gavriel said. "You'll see when we get to Torbit's workshop. He's only a minor Meister, but he still takes up a space as large as the whole to himself."
Gavriel led them through the gates and deeper into the compound. Men and women in simple work clothes darted all about, but it was easy to tell who was a Meister, and how highly ranked they were, by the emblazoned bracers they wore on their left arms. None of them seemed to care that three fairly ragged-looking people were walking in the middle of their enclave, but then again, there were plenty of other people not wearing the bracers as well. The building Gavriel eventually led them to was butted up against the large watermill. Out in the river, Marcus could just see the massive water wheels churning in the flow of the Sigrid River, and again he wondered what the Meisters needed them for. They went inside and immediately turned off the main hall into a large, cluttered workshop. Wires, coils of metal, and enameled covered cylinders were scattered about numerous benches, but so were more reasonable contraptions, such as clockwork machinations, although Marcus still had no clue as to what they did. One corner of the workshop had a device that filled from ceiling to floor and looked like an only slightly ordered jumble of gears. In the middle of all this mess was a scrawny, brown-haired man with slightly oversized ears and a smudged leather apron, and a stout, short man with black hair and an even dirtier apron.
"Torbit," Gavriel said, "I need to talk to you." The scrawny man looked up from his work.
"Thrust? What are you doing here? You know you just can't come barging in."
"I can when I barely escaped with my life because you didn't tell me something I needed to know," Gavriel said.
"Calm down, Gavriel," the other Meister said. "What's this about?"
"I'll tell you what it's about, Jason," Gavriel said. "Last night I was nearly killed by one of your toys."
"I somehow doubt it was one of ours in particular," Jason said, "and I also doubt you were just minding your own business when it happened." Kira walked over to Jason.
"Ignore the oaf, but we are curious about something. Do you know about a gadget that stops bullets?"
"The shock shield?" Torbit said.
"That's..."
Jason silenced Torbit with a glare.
"That's a device in the works, but neither of us are in on that project. In fact, we aren't even supposed to know about it."
"I'm curious how some people do." He gave Torbit another glare.
"I heard some of the higher Meisters chatting about it," Torbit said. "That's all."
"Sure," Jason said. "Anyway, it isn't ready as far as I know. As I hear it, Tesma himself is working on that project. Whatever you saw, it couldn't have been that."
"It's ready enough," Marcus said. "We were shooting at the man point blank, and each time there was a blue flash and he wasn't shot. And he was wearing a Meister's bracer."
Jason looked at Marcus. "And who might you be?"
"New recruit," Gavriel said. "Saved my life last night, and saw this shock shield of yours that isn't supposed to work."
"A Meister's bracer, eh?" Jason said. "Did you get a look at the emblem on it?"
Marcus shook his head. "It didn't have one."
Torbit and Jason shared a look, and Jason frowned.
"It wasn't a Meister's bracer, then."
"What was that about?" Gavriel said. "You two know something you aren't sharing."
Torbit wringed his hands.
Well...
"Gavriel," Jason said, "I like you. You're fun to drink with, and you can tell a raunchy story. But don't think you can just come in here and act like we owe you something. We aren't even supposed to deal with you as it is. Now, do you have any real business besides trying to act like our boss?"
Gavriel grunted and pulled out a large gun, or at least Marcus assumed it was a gun from the Shape. It was not exactly like any weapon he'd seen before. For one, he had no clue where to put the bullets in.
"This jammed up on me," Gavriel said. "Can you fix it?"
Torbit, who looked rather relieved for the change of subject, took the gun and looked it over.
Looks like the action just got filthy.
I know you live in the dirt, Gavriel, but don't you ever clean this thing?"
"He can't remember to clean himself," Kira said. "What makes you think he'll clean a gun that he probably couldn't even put back together afterwards?"
Gavriel glowered at her, and Jason snorted a laugh.
"Careful there, Kira. He might knock you out. With his stench, I'm sure, but still."
I don't see the point in clean if you're just going to get dirty again, Gabriel said. What about you, Marcus? Surely baths were few and far between out on the battlefield.
Oh, you're a soldier? Jason said.
Was, Marcus said. And actually, Gabriel, I bathed fairly often in the field. It's amazing how a good scrubbing can keep a person in good working order.
Oh, Torbett said.
Oh? Marcus looked at Torbett for a moment before he realized the man was not even paying attention to the conversation. His focus was on the gun. Jason opened his mouth to say something, but stopped when he heard the sharp clack of heeled boots out in the hallway. A moment later, a slender woman walked in and looked the entire shop over. She wore a finer dress, the kind nobles might have for an outing, but she also had the bracer of a Meister on her arm. From the look of the sigil, she was extremely high-ranked.
What's this now?
Jason, who had a decently complex sigil on his bracer, looked like he wanted to squeak. Torbett, whose sigil was little more than a few lines, did.
Meister, Jason said. These are just some porters that we know. They came to see if we had any work for them.
The woman looked each of them over in turn. Gabriel earned an approving smile from her, or perhaps it was amused, but it quickly disappeared when she looked at Kira. Kira, for her part, returned the scowl pound for pound. When the woman's gaze landed on Marcus, her eyes slightly widened and gained an almost predatory cast to them.
I can't say I've ever seen a porter's company such as this, the woman said. But no matter. Tesma has been looking for you, Jason. He says the output is noticeably down and is curious as to why. Somehow, I feel I shouldn't be surprised to find the millmaster down in a novice's workshop.
I was helping Torbett out, Jason said. The submeister should have been able to handle anything in the small amount of time I've been gone.
We've been looking for you since this morning, the woman said.
Jason scratched his head.
What time is it?
After lunch, she said. Jason paled slightly.
Oh, I'm sorry, Meister. I'll return to the millhouse and see if I can find out what's wrong.
You do that. She turned to Torbett as Jason left. And you, I want to receive a report on your projects later today. I'd ask for it now, but I have other pressing business. Come to my office after dinner.
Tonight? Torbett said.
But, Meister, you will be at my office on time and prepared, the woman said. I would hate to see you end up a failure like your brother.
Torbett paled more than Jason did.
Yes, Meister.
The woman gave them another look over, and Marcus would swear her eyes lingered on him longer than the others, and then she left. The workshop stood in silence for quite some time before Marcus finally spoke.
Who was that?
That, Torbett said, is Christina Boddock, Tesma's daughter. And she wants a report from me? Tonight? I don't know whether to jump for joy or into the river.
You'll be fine, Gabriel said. Fix that gun?
What? Oh, yeah. Torbett handed the reconstructed weapon back to Gabriel.
Anything else?
Can you tell us anything more about those shock shields? Gabriel said.
Torbett paled again and shook his head.
No, Gabriel. No, I'm serious. I don't know anything more than Jason already told you. They aren't supposed to be working yet, and it's all super hush-hush. Mum's the word and all that.
All right. Gabriel pulled out a few bills and pushed them into Torbett's hand. Thanks for the work. Come on, you two. Let's go.
Micah conversed with Ariel and Becca without really hearing what they were saying, or even what she was. In Voxfeld, she had quickly mastered the art of knowing how to say just enough to be in a conversation without having to really pay attention. It freed her mind for more important things, like considering what she was going to say to Christina when she met her. She had tried to get some feel for the High Meister's daughter from her two companions, but they were vague at best and contradictory at worst. She was a brilliant Meister, yet neither of them could name anything in particular that Christina had made. She was nothing like her dad, yet she was exactly like him. Not having any clue made it harder to plan her words, but not impossible. When she had been in Adervin, Micah had arrived as an unimportant noble that everyone assumed was from Voxfeld, and she had left to a grand ceremony in Duke Gera's personal airship. A gift. If only she could have predicted the war, or else she would not have spent all her time there. As it turned out, all of the strong political ties she had developed there would do nothing to help her now, or her estate. Well, there was the other souvenir she had taken from the city. He was in Tyjervin, hiding and waiting, but she would prefer not to have to use that particular trump card unless she had to. That one would have to be played most carefully, else it would just explode in her face much like a dirigible that had been hit by artillery fire.
and that was why she had not brought him, even disguised, on the airship. He was close enough if she had need, but not too close to burn her if he was discovered. By the time the carriage arrived at the Meister's Guild, Micah had planned out several different possible ways to ingratiate herself to Christina and form a tie to the Meisters. And she was fairly sure she had spoken about the high fashion in Boxfeld and Adderven, as well as had made some noncommittal responses about the eligible bachelors in court. They came to a stop in front of the main building in the complex, and Micah took a deep breath and collected herself while the other two women were maneuvering their dresses out of the carriage. She would succeed. She knew it. Canidus was on the edge of ruin from her inept mother's handling, and she would bring it back with an alliance from the Meisters. And the Meisters would gain, or at least would think they did, from the alliance as well. As she stepped out of the carriage, a willowy woman in a narrow dress and wearing a Meister's bracer was descending the steps from the tower and coolly greeting Ariel and Becca. When the woman saw Micah, a ghost of a smile touched her lips. "And if this isn't just a day for surprises," the woman said. "Ariel, who have you brought along?" "Christina, this is Micah Canidus," Ariel said. "She just flew in yesterday from Adderven," Christina said. "Yes, I saw the ship. Canidus, you say? What brings you to the capital?" "Well, Prince Dorian invited me to attend court," Micah said. "But aside from that, I'm looking to make some new trade arrangements for Canidus." "Trade?" Christina laughed. "And what could a backwater, snow-covered province like Canidus offer? Right now, it's the southern goods that are in demand, what with how the war had choked the trade from that direction." "Canidus has many untapped resources," Micah said. "In fact, I think the Meisters Guild would be wise to investigate the unseen wealth to the north. With the right technologies, it could be profitable for both the holders of the resources and the ones who could bring them out." Christina frowned and turned to Ariel. "I could see some interest in spending a day with a backwater bumpkin, Ariel, but you know how it vexes me when people pretend to have knowledge." Micah forced herself not to respond to the insult. "I am hardly pretending, Meister. I studied for many years in the universities of Voxfeld, and then I spent quite some time in the courts of Adderven, even during the war." "Oh, forgive me," Christina said. "A foreign backwater bumpkin." "You insult me," Micah said. "I can see no reason to it. I think you'd find me pleasant enough conversation, perhaps even stimulating. Why, in Adderven, I often conversed with Quentin Lazarus, and—" Red filled Micah's sight, and it took a moment for her to realize that Christina had slapped her. How had she moved so fast? "Do not say that name in my father's house," Christina said. Micah touched a hand to her cheek. You struck me. Peasant! How dare you strike me? I'm the heiress to a duchy. I could see you hanged for this." As Micah spoke, she noticed the embarrassed looks on Ariel and Becca's faces. Christina appeared wholly unimpressed. "I'd like to see you try," Christina said. "Ariel, I'm sorry, but my temper has soured. I don't think I'll be coming on our outing today. Perhaps we can reschedule for later this week, and when you leave, please take your odd idea of entertainment with you." Ariel demurred, and Christina went back inside, leaving the three of them standing in the courtyard. The other women mutely returned to the carriage, and Micah followed them, blustering. "She wants to see me try, does she? Once I tell Prince Dorian about this—" "Don't," Becca said. "It'll only further embarrass you. Ariel and I will forget what happened today. Just forget it yourself, and it'll be for the best." "But she's a commoner," Micah said. "I haven't been gone so long that the laws have been rewritten that commoners can strike nobles, have I?" "She's the High Meister's daughter," Ariel said, "and the highest-ranking Meister in the country under him. Nothing will come of it. Becca is right. Just forget it. It's our fault. I thought we'd warned you about saying Lazarus's name." Ariel bit her lip and looked at her hands in her lap, and Becca just watched the city roll past. Micah stopped protesting, but she would not forget. She knew the Meisters would be powerful, but that they stood on equal footing to nobility was unexpected. And if Christina was so brazen that she did not even care to be civil to a future duchess, then she was too powerful. At that moment, Micah made a decision. She would not strive to seek an alliance with the Meisters. No. She would instead engineer their fall and help return the power in the city back to its rightful place, the nobility. And then, once order was restored, they would all know who had led them. Canidus would be saved. One way
or the other.